Well, before Barbara and I begin, we thought we would first do a show of hands out in the audience to see how many of you out there at some point in your life have been a nurse. How many currently or formerly? All right, if you look around, there's a good number of hands out there. And our church is one of the few places I can go and see nurse after nurse and not be considered a patient. So it's great. We don't want anybody to get sick here, but it's not a bad place for that to happen, I suppose. Well, even though many of us have gotten an ample opportunity to become acquainted with nurses here in the congregation, I suspect that there are some sides to nurses that those of us non-nurses don't know too much about. And so today we're going to explore the spiritual side of nurses. And perhaps a good place to begin is by looking at how perhaps outsiders, such as myself, our perception of nursing might be a little bit different in some regards from how nurses think of themselves and their work. And here I'm wondering if there might actually be a similarity between pastors and nurses. Sometimes people will say to me as a pastor, gosh, it must be really hard and difficult to be visiting the sick and the dying and to be with families as they're grieving the loss of loved ones. And I think, I never really think of it as an awful burden or anything like that. I actually find it to be one of the most meaningful parts of what I do. And there's something powerful about being a supportive presence to people in those times. And it's also those times when one really gets focused in on what matters in life. And so I wonder if there's something similar for nurses, if us outsiders just see very hard and difficult work, and if there's actually a more powerful spiritual dimension to nursing that we don't see.
Well, I will say that when you first become a nurse, it seems like it's a pretty difficult road to hoe without much reward. When Brooks and I were talking earlier in the week, I said when you go through nurses training, it's like I envision David's experiences when he talks about boot camp. Learning to become a Marine, you have really, really tough people who try to hold you to discipline and hold you to the right way to do things, and you work off shift, and you're tired, and you're going to school while you're learning the art and practice of nursing that you're actually... I come from the vintage of nurse that staffed the hospital while we were training. That once Medicare came in, that couldn't happen anymore. But we actually staffed the hospital. I was telling my war stories to Brooks, and I think it pretty dazzling about the responsibility given early on. But now I consider my career to be a privileged career. Now, I do get paid good money, but it's not the privilege of being rich that I talk about. It's the privilege of being there for people in the most extraordinary ways, in the most extraordinary times. And it has to be a God thing for it to happen the way it does. I now have work where I am literally all over Southwest Washington Hospital. I have staff that work in every unit, and I go there daily to see them. And even before that, I worked with the hospitalists, the physicians that care for the patients, are specialized internal medicine docs who care for the patients in the hospital. And as I would go around doing my work for them, I was all over the hospital. And when I joined this community of believers, I was just so overwhelmed by the opportunities that had to have been God to put me in situations and places that were just unbelievable. I think about Gertie, how I first met Gertie. She and Bob were having their daughter Cindy. Actually was her last hospitalization and came onto a unit, and I had my back. I just happened to turn around, and there were Bob and Gertie telling me about Cindy, and I could go in and share some tears with them, and it was just unbelievable. What a wonderful bonding experience. I think about Virginia. I can't even tell you the number of times when Ernie was a patient in the hospital, I'd run into Virginia. I remember one time having a lunch with Virginia and Donna. And Donna was new to the church. I hadn't had a chance to get to know her. So I gave a little advice to Virginia while I had a chance to get to know Donna. And that was just extraordinary. I think one of my last experiences was with Joni. I was in an ICU waiting room that I'm never at. And there sat Joni, and she jumped up and Barb, and I found out Jerry was in the ICU, and I was able to go in with her and talk to Jerry, and I had just gotten to know him that past year because he taught me how to play Mexican train and dominoes, and I loved that man because he just flirted outrageously with me. And so it gave me a chance to get to know Joni and be there for her in a way that was just extraordinary. And there's other examples of people in the church that come across my pathway. I think about Karen and Glenn one day, and a good friend of theirs was a patient on a unit, and they asked me to go see him. So, you know, it's a privileged position. It's a privileged position in so many ways because I'm sure the social workers from Fort Vancouver will tell you, you get to see a side of life that you may not ever have privy to, people you would never meet. Kind of people that are a little bit dysfunctional from all stratas of society. I say truth is better than any fiction that anyone ever wrote. And it is. It's just extraordinary, particularly my years in the emergency department. 13 years I had either direct supervision or administrative responsibility for our two emergency departments in the community. And I had just the most unbelievable opportunities to be there for patients with families to develop that rapport that's talked about here. Now, my family kind of teases me. I'm sorry my three children aren't here because they love to talk about, you know, a stranger sees Barb is a nurse written on her forehead. And I get into the most unbelievable conversations where people just pour their hearts out to me. And I actually kind of like it. So, yeah, it's a very privileged position.
All right. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I wanted to discuss with you today is how nurses cope and people who work in hospital settings, how they cope with death and dying. I realize not every nurse works on a floor where they're dealing with death every day. But I remember during my 3 years working part-time as a hospital chaplain that that was a significant part of hospital work. And early on, I would get the printouts of all the patients in the hospital floor by floor with the information telling me their name and their gender, age, and their faith. And if, say, a patient had passed away the night before, at the end of the line, it would say expired. And I remember I was kind of taken aback by that. I thought it was somewhat dehumanizing. It's kind of like a person is an item on a grocery store shelf that's reached its expiration date. And I also realized that was kind of the hospital's kind of institutionalized way of dealing with death in a way that's kind of detached and emotionally numbing. Mm-hmm. And I myself had to, on my first day in the hospital, had to learn my own coping mechanisms for dealing with death and dying. I remember I was shadowing the head chaplain around, and we came by a family where the mother was dying. And there was two daughters about my age who were there by her side. They were very distraught, and the image of that really sunk into my thinking. And I almost broke down and lost my own emotional composure because I started to think, well, that could be my mother, and that could be me standing there. And I realized, uh-oh, Brooks, you can't go on thinking like this every day or else you'll never be able to emotionally survive being a hospital chaplain. And so I realized, pretty quickly that I really had to focus on the patient and the families and being a supportive presence to them without getting lost in my own internal world. So I'm wondering what your thoughts and experiences are for dealing with death and dying, for nurses doing that.
Well, as in many things in our lives, I've evolved in that area. I come from the time of when we were trained, we were trained not to show any emotion. Anger, certainly not anger, and not tenderness, really. No tears. My, you would be disciplined if you showed tears. And so for many years, that's how I practiced nursing. Also, this was a days where death was denied pretty much in the hospital. If a patient said, am I dying? You would always reassure them. No, we're doing everything we can to help you. No, certainly. And families would ask us to be in on that conspiracy of not telling their loved one that they might be dying. It was a really, really difficult position that we were often put into. And then I had just the most wonderful experience in the 70s when I first became an emergency department manager, where many of us became interested in the work of Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the stages of dying. But we also understood that there were stages of grieving and that we had a responsibility to help families in their grief by offering them particular experiences in the department, whether it be going in and seeing their loved one after they had died, or whether we even at times would ask the family if they'd like to go in and watch while we were resuscitating their loved one. Now, some of you might be a little grossed out, but there were several people who took us up on that offer, and we supported them. We were there for them. And some of the doctors, who were wonderful, wonderful people, wonderful Christian men, would sit with the families and really talk with them. So that was my initial experience and my transformation. And shortly after that, my own mother died of undiagnosed breast cancer. And I had a hugely spiritual experience. I have three older brothers. And as the family knows, I'm the boss of the family. I'm the only medical person, and so they always defer to me for any questions of a medical nature. And so I was able to lead us through a very, very, ended up very tender experience of making decisions and having mom's memorial service the way we wanted it to be and going to the funeral home. My brother and two sister-in-laws and I went. My mother had a very unique hairstyle where she parted her hair and braided it and put it over the top, and we didn't want any beautician doing some artificial hairdo on my mom. So we went and actually combed my mother's hair and made her look the way we wanted to for her open casket, which is a typical thing in the Midwest. Just recently, my closest friend of over 40 years, Jean Treadway, died of a very unexpected death, and that's why Angie and Rick and Doug and Kelly and Bonnie are here today. We've all really experienced that together in a profound way. She was on one of the medical surgical units, and we were unable to find a diagnosis for her, but we knew she was deteriorating, and we had to get really firm with the doctors. And, you know, I think of myself as being a fairly powerful person around the hospital because I'm well-known and I've worked with the doctors, but we kind of came up with one doctor who wasn't going to be intimidated by us. But Angie was able to get through to him, and her mother was moved to the ICU, and we spent about 3 days in the waiting room just being there while their friends and family came to visit, and it was just a really profound, profound, loving experience. Made the decision that whatever Jeannie had, when we didn't know, we actually didn't know until a week ago, that she had a very, very rare lymphoma of the brain that they seldom find except on autopsy, and so therefore not treatable. And so I think Doug and Angie and I sat in with one of the doctors that I'd known for 35 years, who was a wonderful doctor, and went through the whole course of it and gave us advice, and we decided to take Jeannie off life support. And so the five of us, actually Megan, Angie's daughter, with us, we sat and waited and loved on her and laughed and told girl stories, which was always our way of coping with Jeannie. We all had good girl stories to tell as she died, and cried. What a freedom it felt to cry. And we really did feel God's presence there with us in a big way. So that's how I cope with death. I see wonderful things that happened during that course and particularly afterwards with families.
All right. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Well, this actually dovetails to the final subject I wanted to talk about, which is the spiritual self-care of nurses. And I actually quite enjoyed reading parts of the book that I read from earlier about spirituality and nursing. And in the book, the central image and metaphor is nurses standing on holy ground as they're caring for others. And the author of the book talks about, you know, Moses' burning bush experience and how when he was standing on holy ground, he took off his sandals. And she then goes into how nurses sometimes wear different types of shoes that keep them from touching and experiencing the holy ground on which they stand. And one of those types of shoes is running shoes, that they get so busy going high speed from one task to the next that they forget that they're standing on holy ground. And another kind of pair of shoes is these very kind of sturdy shoes that have thick soles and insulation that kind of make one feel emotionally protected and secure, but also at times keep one from touching and experiencing that holy ground one's standing on. And that kind of made me think about how this holy ground and the idea of staying on holy ground, that can be a renewing, I think, while doing work. And it also relates, I think, to one of the common spiritual techniques for dealing with burnout, which is Moses, when he was confronting the burning bush, that was the first time he was called by God. And what people do is that they'll remember the original story of their calling to their ministry, vocation, or what have you. And it's remembering what initially motivated them and filled them with passion to do their work that helps them to get renewed and revitalized. And so I'm wondering if you have some insights on the spiritual self-care of nurses.
Well, probably David would say, well, Barb's the least expert on self-care. But I have learned to sit on my patio and watch the birds this summer, and that was a big step for me because we nurses are rewarded for working hard and not necessarily for being real focused on self-care. I fortunately work in a department called care management, and that's for a reason. We're a department of social workers and nurses, and I also supervise a group of nurses that work with the doctors, making sure their documentation helps the hospital get paid. So we have a high responsibility just to keep this hospital functional, open, having the equipment that we need, and being there to care for patients in the community. So, and we feel that strongly, and we often think, why are we called to do this? Because it's such a hard job. But our self-care is the support of each other. We often, a group, eat lunch together, and we no business talk at lunch. I say I never have a lunch with that group of people that I don't learn something, like the latest book I should be reading, what restaurant I should be going to, who should come wash my windows, whatever. And that's our self-care. And we debrief behind closed doors, and we do feel called to important work. And I think that once you stay inspired that what you're doing is worthwhile and that people's lives are touched in an unbelievable way and that we touch our family and our friends in profound ways, that we're renewed to go fight the battle.
All right. Very okay. Good. Well, I think after this morning, anybody would be happy to run into you in the hospital if they have to be at the hospital. And so let's give a round of applause to Barbara for joining me up here.